This is disc number 5.
Oscar and Alphonse. She knew it was time to send them back. The caterpillars softly wiggled in her hand, spelling out goodbye. Oscar and Alphonse. The Farkas Conjecture. By Chris von Alsberg. The Farkas Conjecture was named for Josef Farkas, 1892 to 1945. A brilliant and eccentric theoretical physicist who fled Munich in 1939, narrowly escaping the predations of the Nazis. His fate remained a mystery until 1952, when a Swedish naturalist studying the migratory patterns of elk along the Kalixhalvin River came upon the collapsed remains of a small cabin. Beneath the pile of bleached and broken birch logs, the naturalist discovered a brass box that contained the journals of Farkas. In them, the scientist had not only described his years of isolation in the Swedish wilderness, but it also laid out the conjecture that has bedeviled the greatest minds in science for more than half a century. In the journal's final entry, dated April 18, 1945, Farkas indicates he has found the solution to the problem, but feels, before writing it out, that he must check the fishing lines he has hung through holes he'd cut in the frozen surface of the river. Records indicate the spring of 1945 was unusually mild in the northern parts of Sweden. It is assumed Farkas unintentionally and for eternity joined the fish in the frigid waters of the Kalixhalvin. One might describe the Farkas conjecture as the Mount Everest of unproven scientific theorems, except that Mount Everest has been scaled countless times, and not a soul has come close to standing atop the Farkas conjecture. It has certainly not been for want of trying. Armies of mathematicians and physicists have spent the better part of their lives and careers, some might even say their sanity, trying to discover an approach that will lead them to the summit of this great puzzle of all puzzles. What drives them on is their belief that a solution will lead to unprecedented insights into the nature of the physical world, insights with rewards that can scarcely be imagined. Some have claimed that a complete understanding of the conjecture could allow man to control gravity and even manipulate time. Among the most passionate and dedicated believers in the hidden power of the Farkas conjecture was the father of 13-year-old Alice Randolph. Dr. Julius Randolph was a world-renowned professor of physics who had turned his obsession, his Farkas fever, into a family business. He sent each of Alice's three older brothers off to college to earn advanced degrees in math and physics. He then summoned them back to the family home every summer. There, the four of them would spend hours in the professor's blackboard-lined study, opening the door only to receive pots of coffee from Alice's mother and to release the clouds of chalk dust produced by their incessant calculations. Though Professor Randolph had pushed his daughter to follow in her brother's footsteps, the child simply did not have a head for numbers. What really held her interest, as her father put it, was communing with nature. This was true. For a child her age, Alice was unusually content to spend prolonged periods alone, sitting in the backyard, leaning against a tree and gazing into the distance, or strolling through the woods behind the old Randolph home. It was on one of these walks that Alice found herself beside a small stream that ran through the woods near her home. She spotted a bird circling just above a leaf that was being carried along in the stream's current. Precariously balanced on the leaf were two caterpillars. Alice knelt beside the water's edge, scaring away the bird and rescuing the two wet and fuzzy creatures. She placed them on a sunlit rock. Once they'd dried out, they began to move. Alice watched them closely and saw they positioned themselves to form the letter T. "That's strange," Alice thought to herself. Then they wiggled around and formed an H. This was followed by an A and an N, until they had spelled out, "Thank you." Alice lowered herself close to the caterpillars and whispered, "You're welcome." They lay perfectly still. "Are you all right?" Alice asked. They spelled out slowly, "Very hungry." "Of course you are," Alice answered. She gathered up a handful of choice leaves and placed them on the rock. The caterpillar started chewing eagerly. "I know why you're so hungry," she told them. "It's because soon you're going to have to make yourselves cocoons and turn into butterflies."
The instant Alice said this, she felt silly because, of course, if anyone knew about that sort of thing, it would be caterpillars. They stopped eating and answered politely, "Yes, true, hard to believe." They paused for a moment. "We are not sure we will make it." Alice understood. They'd certainly had a close call before she rescued them.
"I can take care of you until you are ready," she told them, and rose to her feet. "Will you wait here for me until I come back?"
The caterpillars seemed to confer, and then spelled out, "Yes, we are grateful." Alice ran to her house and found an empty glass jar. She poked holes into its lid, then hurried back to the rock. Her new friends were still there. She filled the jar with leaves, then set it sideways on the rock.
"You'll be safe in here," she told them.
The first caterpillar wiggled into the jar, and Alice said,
"I think I'll call you Oscar."
As his companion joined him, she added, "And you will be Alphonse." Alice was very excited to show her family the spelling caterpillars. She knew her brothers and father were hard at work, but certainly they would want to meet Oscar and Alphonse. When she went into the study, she could tell they were annoyed by her interruption.
"But look," she said. "Look at what I have."
The men gathered around Alice as she opened the jar. "Why, it's just a couple of caterpillars," one of her brothers said.
"Wait. Just wait," Alice told them.
Oscar and Alphonse wiggled out of the jar and onto the top of a work table that was covered with sheets of paper bearing endless equations and calculations. The caterpillars stopped moving, and Alice spoke to them.
"Go ahead. Spell something. Say hello."
She gave them a little nudge with her finger, but they just lay there, lifting their tiny heads toward the chalkboards, but otherwise remaining motionless. Alice looked up at her brothers, her father, who had already turned away and resumed his work, chalk stick in hand.
"They can spell. Really, they can. I saw them do it outside."
"Well, maybe you should take them back outside then," her oldest brother told her.
He picked up the paper the caterpillars were on and slid them back into the jar.
"Careful,"
Alice told him, taking hold of the jar. Mrs. Randolph appeared at the study door to inform her family that lunch was ready. As the men filed out, Alice held the jar up to her face.
"I'm very disappointed," she said.
She put the jar on the work table and joined her family. From the mealtime conversation, Alice could tell that the morning had not gone well for her brothers and father. What had looked like a promising approach to solving the conjecture earlier in the week had turned out to be just another dead end. Another Farkas Phantom, as her brothers referred to the family's failed attempts. Mrs. Randolph could sense her sons and husband's frustrations.
she suggested they take a break from work for the afternoon. Perhaps a long walk would clear their minds. The professor agreed, reluctantly, and after finishing lunch, the men took their leave. Alice, though invited to accompany them, declined. She wanted very much to get back to Oscar and Alphonse and find out if they would still spell for her. Back in the study, she opened the jar. Oscar and Alphonse climbed out.
"Why didn't you say something when I introduced you?"
The caterpillars spelled out, "Sorry, very shy." Then they lifted their tiny heads once again and stared at the chalkboard. It was filled with equations and notes. Oscar and Alphonse seemed to sway back and forth as they took it all in. Finally, they wiggled around.
"We know."
"Know what?" Alice asked.
"The answer," was their reply.
Alice looked at the chalkboard and then back at Oscar and Alphonse.
"To that?" she asked in disbelief.
The caterpillars began moving.
"Watch carefully," they spelled out.
Alice picked up a pencil and paper. Slowly, Oscar and Alphonse began forming the same strange mathematical signs and symbols that covered the chalkboard. She dutifully and carefully wrote each one down, filling 4 full pages. The caterpillars stopped.
"Is that it?"
Alice asked.
"Not yet," they answered. "Very tired. Very hungry."
Alice helped them back into the jar, where they immediately began chewing on the leaves. They had eaten most of what she had put in the jar, so Alice took them outside to get more, returning to the rock where they had dried themselves out. She heaped leaves onto it. Oscar and Alphonse contentedly munched away. It looked to Alice as if they were growing larger with every bite. You wouldn't think writing out signs, symbols, and numbers would make a person tired, but Alice was as exhausted as the caterpillars, and the 3 of them fell sound asleep. Alice did not awake until she heard a voice calling her name. The sun was getting low in the sky, and Alice looked around for Oscar and Alphonse, and found they had climbed back into their jar and were still asleep. She heard her name called out again, picked up the jar, and headed for home. When Alice stepped out of the woods into her backyard, she saw 2 of her brothers, hands raised to their mouths, calling out for her. When they caught sight of their sister, they excitedly ran to her. Words tumbled out of them.
"Stroke of genius! Mind-blowing! Cosmic insight!"
They pulled her along into the study, where her other brother and her father had just finished filling the chalkboards with the notes that Alice had taken from Oscar and Alphonse. Her father turned when Alice entered the room. He held up the notes. There seemed to be tears in his eyes.
"Alice, Alice, Alice, why didn't you tell us?"
"Tell you what?" she asked.
"That you..."
Her father paused, at a loss for words.
"That you knew. That you were working right along with us, but never said a word?"
He held the papers up high.
"This is a work of genius."
One of her brothers took Alice by the shoulders and looked straight into her eyes.
"This is the approach we have been struggling to find. This takes us closer than we have ever been, than anyone has ever been. How did you figure this out?"
Alice was growing uncomfortable, accepting praise for something she did not do.
"It wasn't me,"
she answered, and lifted up the jar holding Oscar and Alphonse.
"It was them. They showed me what to write down."
The men were silent.
They didn't know whether to rejoice because Alice, the baby of the family, was the most brilliant person they'd ever encountered, or to be worried, because she apparently believed she could communicate with caterpillars. But her father was certain of one thing. As remarkable as Alice's progress and calculations had been, she had stopped just short of proving the conjecture, and there were still some steps to take. He knew those last steps could use up another lifetime. If the only way to get Alice to keep going was to let her pretend that the caterpillars were solving the problem, that was okay with him. He'd spent his life around eccentric and peculiar scientists. He knew how to handle them. So he gently went to his daughter and asked her if she thought her friends might be willing to finish their work. Alice looked into the jar. The overfed caterpillars were sound asleep.
"They're too tired right now, I think. But we can try tomorrow."
Her father nodded, and her brothers, humoring her, agreed and told her that was an excellent idea.
Alice climbed the stairs to her room, carrying Oscar and Alphonse. Later, her mother came in to bring her a tray of food and to tell her how proud her father and brothers were.
Alice awoke early the next morning. She looked into the jar. Oscar and Alphonse had eaten through all their leaves and were lying peacefully at the bottom of the jar. She thought they might like some fresh air, so she got dressed, went outside, and returned to the rock where they had first met. She unscrewed the jar and let the caterpillars crawl onto her hand. She could see how much larger they had gotten in just the day she'd taken care of them. They were ready any minute to start making their cocoons, to become what they were meant to be, butterflies. She knew it was time to send them back. The caterpillars softly wiggled in her hand, spelling out, "Goodbye." She helped them climb onto the bark of a small tree and watched as they slowly inched their way upward and out of sight.